speaker to play Kansas Public Radio. Hey, got an old car or truck you don't want to deal with? Well, the KPR Vehicle Donation Program can help. You can call 877-308-2408. That's 877-308-2408. Or visit KansasPublicRadio.org. And it's so easy. A tow truck takes it away. You get paperwork for your taxes. And the proceeds from that vehicle sale will help support, help bring you the programs you hear on Kansas Public Radio, like Trail Mix. Right after a news update from NPR, we'll get bluesy with Chris Smither from his new album this year, with Louise Taylor from back in 2012. And we've got Lawrence's own Kelly Hunt on the way as well to some of the music in the 3 p.m. hour for you here on Kansas Public Radio.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. The Israeli military says it has completed its mission against Iran in response to Iran's attacks on Israel this past year. Officials say its forces carried out airstrikes overnight, targeting Iran's air defenses and the storage and production sites of ballistic missiles and drones. NPR's Jackie Northam reports on the U.S. reaction.
The National Security Council actually held a background call late last night with a senior administration official who said essentially that, perhaps hopefully, that the U.S. thinks this should be the end of direct military exchange between Israel and Iran. However, that same official said that if Iran chooses to respond, the U.S. is fully prepared to defend against any attack on Israel and has been communicating that message to Tehran.
NPR's Jackie Northam. With 10 days until Election Day, both major presidential candidates, Democrat Kamala Harris and Republican Donald Trump, visited Michigan today. Trump is also in Pennsylvania today. Early in-person voting kicked off across Michigan today. As NPR's Hansi Luong reports, some 38 million voters around the country have cast their ballots so far.
Eligible Michiganders throughout the swing state can now catch up with early voters in the Detroit area and East Lansing, where in-person voting at the polls started days ago ahead of the rest of the state. If you're eligible to cast a ballot in Michigan but haven't registered yet, you still have time to sign up at your local clerk's office through Election Day, the last day of voting. Outside of the swing state, though, voter registration for this fall's election is closing today in Massachusetts and New York. Eligible voters there have hours left to register in person or online. Around the country, election officials have raised concerns about potential mail delays. If you plan to vote by mail, the Postal Service is urging you to check your state's deadline and return your ballot at least 1 week before that date. Hansi Luong, NPR News.
A retrial is underway this week for former Louisville police officer Brett Hackinson over his role in the police raid that killed 26-year-old Breonna Taylor in an apartment in March of 2020. Louisville Public Media's Giselle Roden reports.
Federal prosecutors allege Hankinson blindly fired 10 shots through a covered window and a sliding glass door from outside Taylor's apartment. Prosecutors argued Hankinson's actions are against police protocol and endangered people around him. Hankinson's shots didn't strike Taylor, but they went into a neighboring apartment where a pregnant woman, her boyfriend, and her 5-year-old son were sleeping. Hankinson was charged with 2 felony counts of violating the civil rights of Taylor, her boyfriend, and the neighboring family. The trial is expected to continue through Tuesday. Last year, a judge declared a mistrial after the jury couldn't reach a unanimous decision. If convicted this time, Hankinson could face a maximum of life in prison. For NPR News, I'm Giselle Roden in Louisville.
This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. Here's Chris Smither to open this hour of Trail Mix on Kansas Public Radio.
Easy does it, darling. Let the good times roll. May a mile to go. Rest your weary soul. Savor all the laughter outside the dark crowd's form.
God will come after here tonight. He'll come before the storm. And I can't dance this world without you. Stay inside here where it's warm. Gather all your friends about you here tonight. In the calm before the storm.
You will drive drive a fancy car, you'll be spending free. And when you're having all your fun and your song is number one, you better think of me. 'Cause no matter how big you get or far you go, there's still someone who knew you back when you were just a silly little crapple from down in Turbidor. Down in Turbidor.
Down
in Turbidor.
Chris Smither here on KPR with two songs from his new album this year called All About the Bones. We just heard Down in Turbidor. And before that one, one where I welcome special guest Eliza Gilkyson, entitled Calm Before the Storm. In just a bit, we'll hear from Kelly Hunt, tell you about her big show at the Lawrence Arts Center 2 weeks from now, celebrating her three decades as a recording and performing artist. And up next, we've got Louise Taylor. When Chris Smither did a show for West Side Folk, gosh, this has probably been 15-plus years ago, maybe more. And the opening act was Louise Taylor. And Chris Smither and I were standing in the back of everybody, kind of in the shadows, and Louise was doing her opening set. Chris was nodding along enthusiastically, looked at her, looked at me, and said in his accent, which I cannot reproduce, the real deal. So let's hear Louise Taylor. As endorsed by Chris Smither, here's a song called Walk 5 Miles on KPR's Trail Mix.
Well, she walked 5 miles, she walked 5 miles more. Her little babies in her arms, her little children holding on, her little babies in her arms. She walked 5 miles more. And she knelt down with them, saying, babies, don't you cry. I got all of God's love right here in my arms. And there ain't nothing more. There ain't nothing more. Nature's way. That's nature's way. Simple as the rain coming down. That's nature's way. Nature's way. Simple as the rain coming Memphis, that's all.
Louise Taylor on KPR with Walk 5 Miles and Morning Memphis. That's from her, those are from her 2012 album called Tangerine, with the piano playing Kelly Hunt up next. Nick Taylor, Texas singer-songwriter, on the way, as well as a new one from Willie Watson. Support for Trail Mix on Kansas Public Radio comes from the KU Natural History Museum, home to 4 floors of public exhibits, including the historic panorama, live snakes and insects, fossils, and more, highlighting past and present life on Earth to educate, engage, and inspire. More at biodiversity.ku.edu. 2 weeks from tonight, on November the 9th, Kelly Hunt is going to be celebrating her 30 years as a performing and recording artist, 30 years since her debut album was released. She'll be doing that at the Lawrence Arts Center in the theater there on November the 9th. She's also doing a master class in songwriting November the 8th at 5 p.m. at the Lawrence Arts Center. Info on both of those at lawrenceartscenter.org. Let's hear Kelly Hunt right now on Kansas Public Radio's Trail Mix.
You got to hold the light. Let it flow.
us all.
Kelly Hunt and You Got to Be the Vessel from her album Mercy from about 15 years ago. Gosh, 16 years ago. How the time does fly. In fact, 30 years have flown by since Kelly Hunt released her debut album. She's celebrating her 30-year career at the Lawrence Arts Center with a concert 2 weeks from tonight on November the 9th at the Lawrence Arts Center in the main theater. There's tickets and information and tickets for the live stream version as well at lawrenceartscenter.org. You got to click where it says performances and then click on upcoming performances. And at 5 p.m. on Friday, Friday, November the 8th at 5 p.m., Kelly is teaching a masterclass, music and songwriting masterclass at 5 p.m. Now that's free, but you have to register in advance. Again, do that at lawrenceartscenter.org. Support for Trail Mix on KPR comes from Delta Dental of Kansas, asking listeners when they last visited a dentist for a preventive checkup. Dentists can be found at deltadentalks.com/find. I last visited a dentist a couple of weeks ago. Here's Nick Taylor, the Texas singer-songwriter from his album Not Alone, here on KPR.
It was August. I was moving couches from a house I didn't own. I was searching for a road lead me to a dream I never known. I was certain I'd be gone by now. This life would be forgotten in my mind. Ah, but here I am in a bed, just like the one I left behind. With this room spinning around like a carousel, not too likely to be gone too soon. I was stoned and drunk, writing songs in the kitchen while you danced to the rhythm around me. Well, it wasn't much, but it felt like a life I'd like to lead. We spent half that summer lighting candles for another time and praying for the lights to come back on. We were sweating in the night, waiting for the break of dawn. With that room spinning around like a carousel, we were stuck, stubborn young fools. Writing letters to hang out online, and I had a dream
had a future I was sure could be mine. It was half as lonesome as one I'd just gotten through. There was only one thing I had left to do. Leave that room spinning around like a carousel. Find a future I could call my own.
Nick Taylor from rural southeastern Texas, based in Austin now. His debut album came out this summer called Not Alone. We just heard on KPR Futures Past and then 3 a.m. on the interstate. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Woody Platt, one of the founding members of Steep Canyon Rangers, now doing his own career and with his first album under his own name. And up next, somebody who also was part of a original member of a great band, the Old Crow Medicine Show, it's Willie Watson. We'll hear from his new album next on KPR. Become a KPR sponsor. Your business can harness the trust and credibility of public radio. 82% of listeners take action because of an announcement heard on NPR. Learn more at sponsorship.kansaspublicradio.org. We're here and we are, Kansas Public Radio, from the University of Kansas, 91.5 Lawrence, 99.5 Manhattan, online at kansaspublicradio.org. Here's Willie Watson on KPR.
Said, been a good right boy, Slim, but now you's dead. Been a traveling rascal in your day. You can roam once more than you come to stay. So put these wings on your shoulders and save your feet. Slim spoke up and said, thank you, Pete. Then Peter said, go to hell and see all that they're doing, tell it back to me. But be sure to remember everything goes. Slim said, I see you on the late watch bowl. So we got to cavorting, swell as you choose, like Lindy in the spirit of the St. Louis Blues. It flew and it flew till at last he hit a hangar with a sign reading, this is it. So he parked his wings and he strolled around, getting used to his feet back on solid ground. Then he come to a mansion and walked right in. Up looked the devil with a sickly grin. No, I didn't think to look for you, Mr. Greer. Tell me, how could it be that you come by here? Said, I just dropped by for a little spell. Make yourself at home, here's the keys to hell. Said the devil to Slim, let's go downtown. Took the devil's hand and he showed him around. Showed him body houses and cabarets. Made him think of New Orleans and Memphis days. Showed him folks all fighting round the roulette wheel, like Rampart Street and the south of Peel. Then he took him round the corner where Slim did see a preacher with a woman sitting on his knee. Showed him whiskey stills going everywhere, with a passel of devils stretched dead drunk there. Then he took him to a furnace that some devils was fired. Hot as hell, Slim's a mean perspire. White devils with pitchforks threw black devils on. Slim thought he better get moving along. Said Slim, this makes me think of home. Vicksburg, Little Rock, Jackson, and Rome. Then the devil gave Slim the big ha-ha, turned into a cracker with a sheriff star. So he ran for his wings, lit up from the ground, hauled it back to Peter, he was heaven bound. Said Peter to Slim, man, you got back quick. Tell me, how's the devil, what's his latest trick? Oh no, said Slim, I can't really tell. That place was Dixie that I took for hell.
Willie Watson with Slim and the Devil, the opening track to the new album just called Willie Watson for you here on Kansas Public Radio. Woody Platt up next, the American Patchwork Quartet after that here on KPR. And Willie Watson is on the schedule at Knuckleheads in Kansas City. That's a Tuesday night, 7:30 p.m. show, Tuesday, November the 19th. Tuesday, November the 19th, Willie Watson at Knuckleheads. Support for Trail Mix on KPR comes from Topeka Zoo, offering zoo memberships for individuals and families alike for unlimited admission to the zoo year-round. Details on the benefits of a Topeka Zoo membership at topekazoo.org. As I mentioned, Woody Platt, one of the founding members of the terrific band Steep Canyon Rangers, has gone out on his own now. He is singer and guitarist with the new album called Far Away With You, and we've got a couple of songs from that one right now, beginning with one featuring special guest Del McCurry. It's called Broke Down Engine, a Blind Willie McTell song from the new album by Willie Platt. Not Blind Willie Platt, by Woody Platt, here on Kansas Public Radio.
Feel like a broke-down engine, ain't got no whistle or bell.
Feel like a broke-down engine, ain't got no whistle or bell.
You've been all down and lonesome, you know just how poor men feel. Been cheating craps and gambling, mama, and a dog got crow.
Been shooting craps and gambling, mama, and a dog got crow.
My best clothes have done been sold.
Hey, Lordy, Lord, Lord, Lordy, 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 Lord.
I went down to my praying ground, fell on my bended knee.
I went down to my praying ground, fell on my bended knee.
Lord, give me back my good gal, please. Give me back my baby, and I won't worry you no more.
You give me back my baby, and I won't worry you no more.
Don't have to put her in my house, just lead her to my big front door.
Bell. Yeah, feel like a broke-down engine, ain't got no whistle or bell.
You're a real hot mama, come take away your weeping spell.
Thank you. by the talons of a little bluebird. I'd rather be in the Southland, where the weather is fine. I'll be rocking on a front porch all summer long, on until the evening time. Where the wicked and the righteous walk hand in hand, in the ways of the wayfaring stranger, are gonna lead you to the promised land. In the Southland, where the weather is fine, but I'll be rocking on the front porch all summer long, on until the evening time. Where the wicked and the righteous walk hand in hand, and the ways of the wayfaring stranger are gonna lead you to the promised land. And the ways of the way strangers are gonna lead you to the promised land.
Woody Platt, a terrific new album. I think so, anyhow. Hope you like it. Fly Away With You, the name of the album. That was a song written by a noted Nashville composer who also works with the likes of Ben Folds and Symphony and Chamber Orchestras and more. Josh Carter wrote it. Southland, Woody Platt and his band with guests like Tim O'Brien and Casey Dreesen, who played fiddle and more. And before that, Woody had a very special guest, Del McCurry, as they did Blind Willie McTell's Broke Down Engine. Woody Platt here on Kansas Public Radio's Trail Mix. The holidays are coming, so is KPR's annual Big Band Christmas Concert featuring the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra. Saturday night, December the 14th, it's a great night of Kansas City swing, Christmas carols, and dancing as well at Liberty Hall in downtown Lawrence. Tickets on sale now at the Liberty Hall box office and at Ticketmaster.com. Get the scoop on all the info at KansasPublicRadio.org. Well, that last song made an allusion to Wayfaring Stranger. And I'm going to play a version of Wayfaring Stranger from a really interesting album that came out late last year, called American Patchwork Quartet. The singer is grounded in the classical music of India. Her name is Falu. That's her stage name. You've got somebody from a rock background, singer and guitarist Clay Ross, and two noted jazz musicians, bassist Yashudi Gakamura and drummer Clarence Penn. And they explore a lot of traditional folk music, such as Wayfaring Stranger, for you here on KPR.
I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger, traveling through yet there's no toil, no threat, no danger in this world to which I go. I know dark clouds will gather round me. I know my way is hard and steep, but beauteous I
Wayfaring Stranger is done by the American Patchwork Quartet. The singer Falu, plus Clay Ross, Yasushi Nakamura, Clarence Penn, the album, and the band called American Patchwork Quartet came out right at the end of last year. With Stardate ahead here on Kansas Public Radio, and after that, All Things Considered. As a KPR listener, you can leave an inspired and lasting gift to our community by making a gift through your will. Find out more, talk with your legal or financial advisor, and send us an email if you'd like to know more, too. That email address is legacy@kansaspublicradio.org.
Stardate, October 26th. Late October evenings are great for sky watching. The nights are fairly long and cool, and there's a lot to see. The summer triangle is still high in the west, and Taurus is climbing into view in the east. And this year, three planets are visible before midnight: Venus, Saturn, and Jupiter. One thing that's not visible for the next few evenings is the moon. It doesn't rise until the wee hours of the morning, so if you can get away from city lights, you should be treated to a beautiful view of the stars. Dark skies are especially important for astronomers, allowing them to see deeper into the universe. But other things can limit the view. That includes clouds, not just on Earth, but in the stars. Dust is sprinkled between the stars, and the farther you look, the more dust gets in the way. That obscuring effect is known as extinction. Astronomers have to account for it when they measure an object's brightness, its color, and more. In some cases, they're looking through a fairly uniform scattering of dust, but in others, they're looking through dense clouds, which make it really tough to see what's beyond. Another concern is called seeing, the stability of the atmosphere. If the air is calm, the seeing is pretty good, but if it's turbulent, it smears the view of the stars. Bad seeing makes the stars twinkle more fiercely. That's a beautiful effect for casual sky watchers, but bad for astronomers. And we have more skywatching tips, astronomy news, and much more about the universe in Stardate magazine. Details at stardate.org. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
There are guitars galore this week on Live at Green Lady Lounge, when we hear from Guitar Elation, featuring two of Kansas City's top guitar pickers, Danny Embry and Brian Baggett. I'm Darryl Brogdon. Hope you'll join us for Live at Green Lady Lounge, Saturday at 6 p.m. on KPR.
Next time on KPR Presents, The Haunted States of America.
I was six when I saw Samuel Dinsmore. Mom lifted me up in her arms as the tour guide shone a flashlight on his glass-topped casket. Every hair of his long bristly beard was perfectly preserved, but his sunken face was rotting away, shriveled, covered in white, crackling mold.
That's on KPR Presents, 6 o'clock Sunday evening on Kansas Public Radio.
We're here, and we are, Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, 91.5 KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, 89.7 KANV and KANV HD1 Oldsburg Junction City, 91.3 KANQ Chanute, 90.3. Listen on the web at kansaspublicradio.org or tell your smart speaker to play Kansas Public Radio. Support for Trail Mix on KPR comes from the Lead Center hosting comedian Lewis Black in Goodbye, Yeller Brick Road, the final tour, Saturday, November the 2nd, 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at lead.ku.edu.
It looks like they didn't get anything other than military targets. I hope this is the end.
Israel fires missiles into Iran, but not at oil or nuclear infrastructure. President Biden says he hopes this is it for retaliatory all-out regional war. For Saturday, October 26th, this is All Things Considered. I'm Lauren Freyer in London. Coming up, we'll hear about damage from those airstrikes and get the latest from Gaza and Lebanon. We'll also talk about election nerves with a Pentecostal preacher in North Carolina.
If I thought the fate of history depended on the 2024 election, I'd be as anxious as you and popping as many pills as you are.
And 3/4 of England's rivers have unsafe levels of raw sewage.
This is picturesque UK town, and here we have an open sewer.
I hung out with the surfers against sewage. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Hurst. Israel carried out its anticipated attack on Iran overnight, hitting what it says were military targets. NPR's Daniel Estrin has more.
Israel's response was designed as a kind of a quid pro quo after Iran carried out its missile strikes on Israel on October 1st, and also designed in a way that Iran would be able to contain any reaction. Israel says that its retaliation against Iran is now over, and Iran indeed is signaling that it's downplaying this.
NPR's Daniel Estrin reporting. President Biden says he was briefed by the U.S. intelligence community on the strikes, and he says he hopes this is the end. Vice President Harris on the campaign trail in Michigan today says Israel has a right to defend itself, but
we are also very adamant that we must see de-escalation in the region going forward.
Early voting opened statewide in Michigan today. More than 38 million people have already voted around the country. And former President Trump was also in the key swing state this morning, rallying in the Detroit suburb of Novi. And Pierre's Don Gagne has more.
The Trump campaign is working to make inroads with traditionally Democratic groups, including the large Muslim and Arab American population in Michigan. There's anger in that community toward the Biden administration over the lack of a ceasefire in Gaza. At Trump's Saturday rally, he announced the endorsements of a group of local Muslim leaders he met with, among them Imam Bilal al-Zuhairi, who spoke to the crowd.
The bloodshed has to stop all over the world, and I think this man can make that happen.
Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris also campaigns in Michigan this weekend, including a rally in Kalamazoo with former First Lady Michelle Obama. Don Gagne, NPR News, Detroit.
And Trump is also campaigning in Pennsylvania today. Federal agencies say they're investigating a Chinese hacking operation targeting the telecommunications industry. NPR's Jenna McLaughlin has more.
Chinese hackers have recently infiltrated U.S. telecommunications companies. That's according to the FBI, which first detected suspicious digital activity and the Department of Homeland Security's cybersecurity agency, CISA. Private sector cybersecurity experts call the newly identified group Salt Typhoon. Other Beijing-linked groups, including Volt Typhoon and Flax Typhoon, have been linked to digital campaigns to break into U.S. critical infrastructure in places such as Guam and Hawaii, as well as operating massive digital botnets. The investigation into Salt Typhoon is ongoing. Depending on what the group was able to access, from private phone records to investigative wiretap data, it could be an intelligence goldmine for China. Jenna McLaughlin, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Trick-or-treaters dressing up as Dr. Doom or Lady Deadpool will be in good company this year. As NPR's Netta Ulubi reports, the majority of this year's leading costume trends come from Hollywood.
It seems movies still matter, at least on October 31st.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
The year's most searched costumes are nearly all from popular movies. Number one, from Beetlejuice. You can find videos all over TikTok and YouTube explaining how to make costumes for the character known as Shrunken Head Bob.
The shrunken head is glued to the top. Next, we've got the yellow suit.
Other trending costumes this year include all the emotions from the movie Inside Out. Outside the realm of cinema, trending costumes include Chipotle burritos and the ill-famed Olympic breakdancer known as Raygun. Netta Ulubi, NPR News.
Airport line jumpers, beware. American Airlines is testing a new technology at 3 airports around the country during the boarding process to cut down on the number of people who try to jump the line to get on the plane. The technology, which is being tested at Albuquerque International, Tucson International, and Washington National in Virginia, alerts gate agents with an audible sound if a passenger tried to scan the ticket ahead of his or her assigned group. American Airlines says a gate agent then tells the customer they can't accept the pass and tells them to get back in line until their boarding group is called. I'm Janine Herbst.
and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, dedicated to improving the learning experience for America's students by sharing what works in pre-K through 12 education at edutopia.org.
Here's a look at the KPR weather forecast. It's 64 and fair. Wind is from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Wind will be from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 70s. Wind will be from the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. It's 64 and fair. Stay tuned for more KPR weather. I'm Maria Lopez.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Lauren Freyer. Israel carried out a series of strikes against Iran overnight, including in the capital city of Tehran. Israel says the strikes targeted military facilities. This is the first time Israel has openly admitted to attacking the Islamic Republic. Iran's National Air Defense Forces released a statement calling the damage, quote, limited. And according to Iranian state media, four soldiers died. The strikes could push the two closer to larger conflict as Israel is fighting wars in both Gaza and Lebanon. For more, we're joined by NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Tel Aviv. Kat, what can you tell us about the strikes this morning?
So NPR spoke with an official briefed on the matter who was not authorized to speak publicly. And that official said Israel carried out three waves of strikes on Iran. First, on its air defense systems. The second and third wave targeted sites that store and produce ballistic missiles and drones, like the ones that Iran has shot at Israel in the past. These strikes last night were in retaliation to an attack on October 1st, when Iran launched almost 200 ballistic missiles at Israel, many of which were intercepted. Iran seemed to downplay the attack, saying there was limited damage to military bases in three provinces, including in Tehran. There has been worry leading up to this that Israel might try to strike Iran's oil or nuclear infrastructure, and the U.S. had been working to talk Israel out of doing that.
There are fears of an all-out war between Israel and Iran. What's the possibility of that?
Well, here's what President Biden told reporters traveling with him today.
It looks like they didn't hit anything other than military targets. My hope is this is the end.
So from the U.S. perspective, the U.S. is hoping it's over. The official that NPR spoke to earlier today stressed that these strikes were designed to be a warning to Iran from Israel to show just how far-reaching its intelligence is. So for Israel, this could be just the beginning of something larger. As for how Iran will respond, following the strikes, Iran's foreign ministry put out a statement saying in part that Iran, quote, considers itself entitled and obliged to defend against acts of external aggression.
Israel is, of course, fighting wars in Lebanon and Gaza against Iranian-backed groups, Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in Gaza. What's the latest there?
Well, both of those wars are very much ongoing, with many people being killed. Israel has continued striking southern Lebanon and Beirut, saying it's taken out hundreds of Hezbollah rocket launchers, while Hezbollah is still firing dozens, if not hundreds, of rockets a day at Israel. In Gaza, the situation in the north is especially dire. The Israeli military has besieged areas there. It's forcibly displacing Palestinians and trapping others in their homes in the midst of a very heavy conflict. In the past few days, Israeli forces raided the Kamal Adwan Hospital in the north, which is full of patients, opening fire and detaining all the male medical staffers, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health. The Israeli military says it is operating in the area of the hospital based on intelligence of, quote, terrorists and terrorist infrastructure. The military did not respond to NPR when we asked about the raid.
Kat, is there any end in sight for this?
Well, there is talk in diplomatic circles of a short-term ceasefire in Gaza that would allow for the release of some of the Israeli hostages. So it's possible talks on that could resume this week. It's unclear what that would mean for Israel's war in Lebanon, if anything. So we're keeping an eye on all of that in the coming days.
That's NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Tel Aviv. Thanks, Kat.
Thank you.
Italy has an unusual new immigration policy. It's deporting asylum seekers to neighboring Albania. That country has agreed to process them. The first batch of migrants arrived there this month. But as Willem Marx reports, it hasn't gone exactly as planned.
In the warm mid-October sunshine, several figures filmed from afar entered a large holding center in the Albanian port of Shengjin. The men came from Bangladesh and Egypt and had been picked up several days earlier in the central Mediterranean. A handful of Albanian protesters held banners that called this offshoring of Italy's immigration policy the end of the European dream. For more than a decade, the European Union struggled to confront soaring migration from less developed nations, with Italy seeing tens of thousands arrive each year across the treacherous waters south of Sicily. A promise to tackle this challenge helped elect Italy's right-wing Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni. The dozen migrants that arrived in Albania last week were returned to Italy within days after a court order found their countries of origin, Egypt and Bangladesh, could not be considered safe. Since then, Meloni's government sought to override that ruling with an updated law, and so more migrants could soon be housed here in an old airbase at the edge of a remote Albanian village we visited called Jada.
And as we weave our way through several backcountry roads amid some tumble-down vineyards and a few farm buildings, we come across a pretty striking sight, a very tall metal fence with several Italian police officers standing at the gatehouses.
Once out of the car, I start talking to one of them.
Salve, buongiorno.
So one of the guards outside these huge metal fences at the Jada camp has just been explaining to me they don't know how long they're going to be here. He's come from Lampedusa, an island just south of Sicily, where a lot of migrant arrivals from North Africa typically reach. And of course, many of them will be diverted if the Italian government gets its way to this camp.
For some locals, the camp's creation represents an economic blessing, but also a moral quandary. The village saw development, says village head Alexander Precker, but people became pessimistic and stressed when they saw the camp fenced with an 8-meter-high barrier. Precker is also a restaurant owner in Jada and says his community considered the new jobs and new customers tied to the camp a privilege, though many were concerned that migrants would be forcibly detained. Let them come, get registered, have their data collected, and then let them be free too, he says. Some will work, some will leave, because this is what a united Europe is about. People with hands and eyes seek bread, seek work, seek well-being, so it's not good to fence them in like that. For community rights activist Arilda Lieshi, who I met back at a cafe in the capital Tirana, even those financial benefits are debatable.
Some people are seeing it as a temporary boost in the economy there because they've opened some jobs and the real estate prices have gone up. I see that as very problematic for the economy as well. I don't want us to become this project-based economy where European countries bring their refugee camps.
Italy's partnership with Albania may start to operate very soon, but whether it actually works in the long run remains an open question, and many other European countries will watch very closely for an answer. For NPR News, I'm Willem Marx in Jadar, Albania.
Former New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady appears to want to have it all in retirement. His debut as an announcer was one of the most anticipated things about this NFL season. Then he officially became part owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. That dual role, team owner and TV broadcaster, has put the NFL in uncharted territory. NPR's Becky Sullivan reports.
The appeal of Tom Brady as a broadcaster is obvious. The man played for more than 20 years in the NFL, and with 7 Super Bowl rings on his fingers, it is not controversial to say he's the greatest quarterback ever. So Fox signed him to a $375 million broadcasting contract, and now, every Sunday since September, Brady has been on TV calling the shots.
He's Tom Brady, and I'm Kevin Burkhardt, and you're a broadcaster. How about that?
We're here. It's been quite a journey, but I love being
Fox is betting that fans will tune in to hear Brady specifically, to hear personal stories about his legendary career, like last Sunday when he pointed out the Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo, a man who helped spoil Brady's aspirations of a perfect 2007 season when his New York Giants upset Brady's New England Patriots in the Super Bowl.
And there's Steve Spagnuolo. He's been the bane of my existence. I still have PTSD from some of those blitzes in the 2007 Super Bowl.
And to see moments like his interview with Patrick Mahomes, the most decorated quarterback back in the game today.
People compared me to Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw. 4 Super Bowls, you got 3 and all their records. Now they compare you to me. So how's that make you feel? And now that I'm sitting right here in front of you.
No, it's honestly an honor. I'm not saying that.
But now Brady has a stake in the games he's calling, a big one. Earlier this month, he became a 5% owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. His portion is valued by Forbes at more than $330 million, and that investment could grow the more valuable the Raiders become as a franchise.
The Journalism 101 issue here is that as you're a team owner, you're in competition with 31 other teams.
This is Alan Abrahamson, who covered sports on air for years and now teaches journalism at the University of Southern California.
When you have a vested interest in the outcome of the game, and as the team owner, that's obvious. You care who wins and loses.
Brady hasn't yet called a Raiders game, but in a recent press conference, NFL executive Jeff Miller confirmed to a reporter's question that it would be allowed.
Tom Brady's part owner of the Raiders now. Can he do Raiders games?
Yes, he can.
Now, the NFL has put some restrictions on Brady. He can't go to other teams' facilities or watch their practices. He won't be able to sit in on pregame meetings with their coaches. Those are all ways that TV announcers usually prepare for games. And like any NFL player or team official, Brady isn't allowed to criticize referees. And in football, bad calls or missed calls are inevitable, like at the end of Thursday night's game between the Los Angeles Rams and the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, he got that face mask. He sure did.
Yep.
It's illegal to hold on to another player's face mask, but that's exactly what a Rams defender did to the Vikings quarterback in his own end zone. It should have been a penalty and a fresh chance for the Vikings to keep trying for a game-tying touchdown. Instead, the refs didn't call anything and let the game come to an end. And unlike Tom Brady, the announcers on Amazon Prime, Kirk Herbstreit and Al Michaels, were free to criticize what happened.
And he got away with one right there.
And Viking fans are going, what the hell?
Brady also isn't allowed to criticize other teams or NFL officials. In theory, he could be fined or even suspended if he breaks those rules. For now, neither Fox nor the NFL will make him choose between broadcasting and ownership. And because Fox will broadcast this year's Super Bowl, Brady will be there too. Becky Sullivan, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. Available online anytime for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us for All Things Considered here on a Saturday afternoon. Support for All Things Considered comes from the Dole Institute of Politics, hosting former Congressman Luke Messer and Sherry Bustos for their series Congress in the 21st Century, Wednesday, 4 p.m., more at doleinstitute.org. And Maselli's, presenting Cabaret Brunch, featuring Mary Baker and friends, tomorrow. Brunch buffet at 10 a.m., show starts at 11. Information and tickets available at Maselli'sOnline.com. Tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, partly cloudy, a low of 40 degrees. For tomorrow, sunny with a high of 72. Cloudy Sunday night with a low of 57. Temperatures in the mid-80s on Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
I'm Janine Herbst with these headlines. President Biden told reporters today he was updated on Israel's anticipated attack on Iran overnight by U.S. intelligence agents, and he says he hopes this is the end. A source tells NPR there were three waves. The two major presidential candidates are on the campaign trail again this weekend, with just 10 days to go until the election. Former President Trump is in Michigan and Pennsylvania today. Vice President Harris also in Michigan, rallying with former First Lady Michelle Obama. Today is Michigan's first day of statewide early voting. And federal health officials say the number of people sickened by the E. coli outbreak at McDonald's has risen to at least 75. One person has died. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Arm, committed to delivering innovative, advanced computing designed to enable worldwide companies to unleash the capabilities and experiences of AI. The future of AI is built on Arm. Arm.com. Insurance. Progressive is looking for dedicated and forward-thinking individuals to join their growing team. More information, including application, at progressive.com/careers. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Lauren Frayer. I'm filling in for Scott Detrow, who's been reporting from North Carolina, one of a handful of states that will determine this year's presidential election. Here's his latest report from Raleigh.
On a late October evening in North Carolina's capital city, a massive stage in a dark auditorium is backlit by tall screens, and bass-thumping music and vocals are filling the space. There's a table of judges in front of the stage. Think American Idol, but with a clearly religious focus. It's worship team audition night at Cross Assembly Church inside this congregation's nearly 1,700-seat sanctuary on a sprawling multi-wing campus that resembles a high school or community college.
Hey, Scott. Nice to meet you.
Scott, good to meet you, man.
This Pentecostal church is led by Pastor Chad Harvey, whose sermons, often to weekly crowds of about 3,000, usually wind up on Cross Assembly's social media channels.
If I thought the fate of history depended on the 2024 election, I'd be as anxious as you and popping as many pills as you are. Fortunately, I don't believe that stuff. My hope is in Jesus, not in the politics.
But as Harvey ends up telling us, there is no way to completely avoid political discourse in the church.
Every time I take this stage, I do not take it in my own name. I don't take it in the name of the lieutenant governor. I take it in the name of Jesus Christ.
That is Republican Mark Robinson, North Carolina's lieutenant governor and now a gubernatorial candidate, speaking to Cross Assembly back in 2021, several years before he became the star of Democratic attack ads across the North Carolina airwaves for a string of controversial comments, stances, and alleged actions. Evangelical and Pentecostal conservatives are a powerful force in Republican politics. They have fueled the rise of candidates like Robinson, and they've stuck by former President Donald Trump for going on 3 presidential elections in a row. That's despite Trump's long list of criminal charges, sexual harassment and assault allegations, and regular brutal personal attacks on political opponents, all of which wouldn't fit many people's definition of a Christian.
Kamala is mentally impaired. If a Republican did what she did.
In fact, in the closing weeks of a tight race in North Carolina, Trump has been appealing directly to religious conservatives.
Christians, get everyone you know and vote. You have to vote.
Harvey and I talked about all of this, Trump, religion, politics in general, in a small side prayer room on Cross Assembly's campus.
How much does politics come up day-to-day conversation when you're talking to people here, when you're talking to people in the congregation, when you're doing your pastoral work?
You know, it's very interesting. I think an outsider looking into the evangelical Pentecostal movement would assume that politics plays a huge role in the life of the church. It actually doesn't. I'd say 1-2% of my conversations are about politics. I think a lot of people are just trying to make ends meet. They're trying to live their lives. But politics, surprisingly, does not play as big a role in the life of a faith community like this that a lot of people would. Now, I've told our folks this, you know, our church is accused of being a little bit too political. And I said, you know, the church is not getting more political. Politics is getting more spiritual. And so we're seeing this infiltration into the political realm of things that used to be the church's territory, family, human sexuality. Now politics is starting to tackle those spiritual issues.
And in your perspective, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I think it's neutral.
It is interesting to me, and I'm wondering what you think about this. So many of the big issues in this race are those kind of spiritual world issues. It's what does it mean to be a family? It's what role should the government play in regulating abortion? It's what to do with people who are coming into this country as immigrants. Obviously a big theme in the Bible. How do you think about the big issues that are out there and what the role is for the church to play in having conversations with people?
Yeah, so there are some issues that I feel the political world has now infringed, if you would, on my territory.
Yeah.
Human sexuality, the sanctity of life. I think with our congregation, if you were to ask what are the moral issues that are really driving your views of the political climate, it would be number one, the sanctity of life. Religious liberty, I think, is becoming more and more of an issue as well. This whole transgender thing, and again, the transgender thing is an umbrella term that encompasses Title IX and athletics and all that. Should biological males be in women's athletics? That umbrella term is a huge issue.
How do you think about which candidates you're going to support? Is it through the lens of the issues they support? Is it through how they come across as individuals?
Scott, I think what I've told our congregation is we look at the platform, not the person. And so you can have some people with some pretty deep moral struggles who are upholding a platform that we support. And I tell our people, don't pay as much attention to the struggles. Pay attention to the platform. Because here's what the Bible says. There's none righteous, no, not one. We're all messed up people. This core message that we have of the gospel, it's the good news. The bad news of the good news is we're all messed up people. So whether it be some of the accusations that have been lodged at Mark Robinson recently, whether it be Kamala Harris and Willie Brown and did you work at McDonald's, Donald Trump telling Howard Stern the sexual revolution of the 1970s was my personal Vietnam. They're all messed up people. And so that's the one thing we have to keep in mind as a congregation.
Let me just ask the direct question about this with Trump, because I think we have all in this country been thinking about this for a decade now, for good or bad.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people outside the evangelical or Pentecostal world, people who either are different religious affiliations or more secular people, who kind of have, they think, you know, Donald Trump has such a high support from so many Christians around the country, and yet is somebody who lives in a gold tower with his name on it, who crudely insults people, and among other things, you know, is facing criminal charges. And they just feel like this is not the message, as I understand it, of Christianity, but there's such a strong support. I know you've gotten this question before. Yeah. What's the best way you explain it to someone who says, I just don't understand that?
Yeah. So I would say, again, I keep going back to we're all messed up people. Trump is messed up. Kamala Harris is messed up. Joe Biden has had accusations thrown at him. We are all messed up individuals. And so I think what I keep coming back to is a lot of people just seem to think that we're having a continuous 24/7 Trump rally in the evangelical Pentecostal circle. We're actually not. We're well aware of his foibles. We're well aware of where he's messed up. I think the reason Trump is resonating with evangelicals is this mess aside that we all know about. The platform he's supporting, like it or not, is closer aligned to our view of Scripture than the other side.
Does that create a world, though, where there's never any accountability for anybody personally?
I do think that at some point that there will be a line that's crossed. And so at that point, what I said is, that's fine. Man, let's just make sure we're using that standard across the board. So this candidate did this. I can't support him. That's fine. Don't support him. The only thing I'm asking is use that same standard.
You mentioned the lieutenant governor. I want to ask about that, because I think one of the first things that drew us was that he's spoken to Cross Assembly in the past, and you've gotten to know him a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you make of him as a candidate and as a man?
You know, as a man, very winsome. I think one thing that drew him to a lot of individuals in our congregation is we have somebody in high political office who's talking our language. I've said many times about Mark Robinson, for every strength is a corresponding weakness. His strength is he's not part of the political system. The weakness is sometimes he talks like a man who's not part of the political system, and he phrases things that make people uncomfortable. But as an individual, I really feel like the values that he espoused from the pulpit really resonated with our biblical worldviews.
What I'm hearing is that line hasn't been crossed yet.
Yeah,
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, no, that's, sure. I think what I would say is the Bible says God hates unequal scales. So if we're going to hold Robinson to this standard, that's fine. And again, I'm not trying to be the National Enquirer, but okay, was the Willie Brown relationship a leg up to ascend in the political realm?
It's a critique many conservatives have made, though there's no clear evidence it's true, that an early relationship with San Francisco's then mayor, while he was separated from his wife, launched Vice President Kamala Harris's political career. As for Robinson?
Okay, yeah, he messed up. If that's your standard, I can't vote for Robinson because he messed up. I'm not saying that he did. But if that's the standard, that's fine. But now I'm going to ask you to hold every other candidate that you potentially would support to that standard. I would not bring him probably on staff as my pastor, co-pastor here until we get these issues situated. So we're now talking about him as a political candidate, not as a spiritual leader.
Yeah.
Because he did speak at our church, and I think some people see that and say, well, no, do you view him as a spiritual leader? Well, no, I don't. He's still a political candidate.
Harris and Democrats have been trying to reach out to religious voters as well, highlighting Trump's actions and statements.
Where I was raised, and I know many of us were, understanding that our God is a loving God, that our faith propels us to act in a way that is about kindness and justice and mercy, that is about lifting one another up. And let's talk about the contrast here. Donald Trump and his followers spend full time trying to suggest that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down.
We asked Pastor Chad Harvey about that comment and its direct reference to Scripture.
Look, Micah 6:8, which made in a recent interview on iHeartRadio. To love mercy and walk humbly with your God. Chad, he's not doing justly. He's not loving mercy, and he's not walking humbly with his God. So how can you support a man like this? And I think probably I would say we might be redefining justice and mercy. And by that, I would say Donald Trump, with some of his positions on life, is showing more justice and mercy to the unborn or the postborn than the left is.
I think we've talked about this in pieces here and there, but I want to give you a chance just to directly talk about it in one swoop. What do you think more secular listeners, listeners of other religious persuasions, listeners who live in other part of the country, what do you think it is that they misunderstand the most about congregations like yours?
Wow, that's a great question. I would say, again, kind of putting my ear to the ground and seeing what's being said about the evangelical Pentecostal voting bloc. I think one of the biggest misperceptions is that this is what is dominating our mind. This is what's really driving us. I keep hearing this term Christian nationalism. Yeah. That's been the big buzzword in 2024. I've not heard of that until this year, that we're just trying to impose our Christian beliefs on this nation and make us a Christian nation. That may be true for other congregations. I don't know that that's true for a large segment of evangelical Pentecostal Christians. You know, the Bible says, make it your goal to live a peaceful and quiet life. I think a lot of us just want to have a peaceful and quiet life, be able to share the good news of Jesus Christ. I don't think we're driven by this desire to make America a Christian nation. And I don't think politics really occupies as big a part of our brain as people think it does.
Well, Pastor Chad Harvey, thank you. Despite that, coming to talk politics with us.
Yeah, that's right. It's great. No, I enjoyed it, man. Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you, sir.
That was one of several reports Scott filed from North Carolina as part of NPR's We the Voters series. The reporting was produced by Tyler Bartlam and Catherine Fink and edited by Ashley Brown. Here in London, thieves have decided there's a lot of cheddar in artisan cheese. Let me explain. According to reports in the British press, scammers posing as cheese distributors have allegedly swindled Neal's Yard Dairy out of nearly 1,000 wheels of cloth-bound English and Welsh-aged cheeses. The cheese came from three producers and is worth an estimated $390,000. The cheesemakers have already been paid, so Neal's Yard is shouldering the loss. Tom Carver of Westcombe, traditional cheesemakers in Somerset, says his wheels were part of the fraudulent order. He expressed his dismay and befuddlement on Instagram.
It's so weird. I mean, out of all the stuff to steal, you know, cheddar, like our cheddar, it's almost like it feels like a bit of an honour, really, the way that it's got such value.
Celebrity chef Jamie Oliver would like to know what the thieves plan to do with all of that cheese.
So if anyone hears anything about lorry loads of very posh cheese, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with it, really. I mean, are they going to, like, grate it and get rid of it in the commercial industry? I don't know. I mean, it seems like a really weird thing to nick.
Indeed, waiting around to unload tons of aged cheese could raise a bit of a stink. This is NPR News.
We turn now to an ancient Norse saga and a sample of 800-year-old DNA that's just been sequenced, genetic material that gives us a look at a character in that saga before he met his tragic end. Here's science reporter Ari Daniel.
In the 12th and 13th centuries, Norway was racked by civil war, a period chronicled in the Sverre saga, named after King Sverre Sigurdsson. A portion of the saga is devoted to the king's ongoing feud with his chief enemy,
the archbishop. Battles are described in detail,
including one that took place around the year 1180, near the present-day city of Trondheim in central Norway, says archaeologist Anna Pettersen. The archbishop's fighters attacked the king's castle when the king was away.
They completely destroyed the castle. They burnt all the houses.
Then, the saga says,
the archbishop's people, they wanted to do something nasty.
They took a dead man and cast him into the well head first, and then filled it up with stones.
Possibly to poison the water supply.
It says nothing about who this dead man was, where he came from.
Pettersen says most scholars have assumed he was connected to the king. In 1938, a partial excavation of the well revealed a man's skeleton, possibly that of the person described in the saga. The remains were left in place. Then, a decade or so ago, Pettersen, who's with the Norwegian Institute for Cultural Heritage Research, and her colleagues started the hard work of lifting out the stones and lots of trash and uncovered the skeleton.
He has a bad back and he has evidence of heavy manual labor all his life.
Pettersen knew there must be more to the story, so she teamed up with an evolutionary genomicist, Michael Martin, with the Norwegian University of Science and Technology.
We managed to take a sample from the skeletal remains. It's from the cranium and a leg bone.
Then Martin and one of his students hit the lab.
With full suits and double gloves and booties on, it's not a very comfortable working environment.
And collected as much DNA as possible from those old bones.
We're very frustrated to find there's been a lot of degradation of the original human DNA.
But then another student picked up the project with the idea of finding more skeletal material.
And once he got a hold of the teeth, then things really changed.
The root of one of those teeth had enough DNA to sequence the ancient man's genome and compare it to thousands of people today.
We were able to deduce that he was a male. We could say that he was very likely to have blue eyes, blonde hair, and an intermediate skin tone, and that his ancestry traces back to a very specific county in southern Norway.
Martin says this adds new detail to the centuries-old saga.
Just finding the remains shows that they're not made up, these stories. They might be elaborated and exaggerated, but they're based on fact.
Was he a king's man, though? Dana Christensen is a genetic epidemiologist at the Norwegian Institute of Public Health. She wasn't involved in the study, which is published in the journal iScience. She agrees the results support the story of the man pitched down the well, but it's circumstantial.
We can't prove that this person is actually that which was described. Some of the stories tend to be more accurate than others, even if they involve real people and events.
Still, this skeleton did belong to someone, and these new details about his appearance and origins inscribed in his DNA, Anna Pettersen says they personalize him.
He has been no one, but now he has become someone. He has had a life.
One potentially documented in both his genes and an ancient Norse epitaph. For NPR News, I'm Ari Daniel.
This is NPR News.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place to find NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. Available online anytime for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us for All Things Considered here on a Saturday afternoon. The holiday season swings with KPR's Big Ben Christmas coming up Saturday night, December 14th at Liberty Hall. The Kansas City Jazz Orchestra will be on hand once again to provide some Big Ben hits and Christmas favorites, too. Tickets are available now at the Liberty Hall box office and Ticketmaster.com. Made possible in part by Dr. Stephen H. Chronister, Healing Smiles of Topeka. For tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, partly cloudy skies, a low of 40 degrees. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 72. For Sunday night, cloudy with a low of 57 and temperatures in the mid-80s on Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
I'm Janine Herbst with these headlines. Early voting kicked off statewide in the state of Michigan today, and those who haven't registered can do so through Election Day. Meanwhile, voter registration for the election in Massachusetts and New York closes today. More than 38 million people around the country have already cast their ballot, University of Florida's election lab. In Kentucky, a retrial continues next week for a former Louisville police officer over his role in the police raid that killed 26-year-old Breonna Taylor in her apartment in 2020. The trial is expected to last through Tuesday. And Game 2 of the World Series takes place tonight between the L.A. Dodgers, who lead the series after beating the New York Yankees last night. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org. From FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, working to maximize the impact of charitable giving and to create customized philanthropic solutions. Learn more at fjc.org. And from listeners like you, who donate to this NPR station.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Lauren Freyer. Last June, the morgue manager at Harvard Medical School was arrested on charges of stealing and trafficking in human remains that had been donated to science. His arrest unraveled a nationwide network of bodies traders. Member station WBUR dug into this case and ended up exploring the world of legal remains trading in the podcast Last Seen Postmortem. Here's an excerpt with host Ali Jar Manning. And a warning, this segment contains descriptions of human remains.
I actually couldn't believe how easy it was to find human remains collectors to talk to. I logged onto Facebook and searched, well, skulls, and I found a bunch of Facebook groups specializing in the oddities trade. I joined a public group called Real Human Skulls Only, No Scammer. Despite the name, there are a lot of scammers in this group. People post stolen photos and try to get some cash. Some of these posts, it looks like they dug up a grave and snapped a photo of the bones to sell. The skulls are cracked and look dirty. They don't have any hardware that a medical specimen would have. There are also more legit listings, too.
So like this one says, vintage medical grade partial human noggin, $450 plus, and then a picture of a little ship, so plus shipping.
Some of the listings spell human, H-O-O-M-A-N, to avoid getting flagged. And instead of using numbers to list the price, they include emojis of the figures. I joined another group, this one called the Serious Wet Specimen Collectors, Buyers and Sellers Group. This page is filled with jars of preserved organs, animals, reptiles. There are dead puppies and kittens in jars, a ball python with no eyes in a jar, a 6-inch sea slug in a jar. There are human specimens, too.
Human wet specimen of a child's tongue, windpipe, heart, and lungs who passed away tragically from choking on a marble.
All my clicking around leads me to a page for something called the ossuary. The description says, we ensure a safe home and dignified transition for prior medical specimens and cremains. I reach out to the couple that runs it, Justin Capps and Sonia Cobb, and they are more than happy for me to come visit them at their home in Smyrna, Delaware. Justin and Sonia don't have any connection to the thefts at Harvard, but I want to talk to them and those like them, because they're part of the demand for human remains. And that demand causes people like Cedric Lodge to allegedly find the supply. So I want to understand why they do this and how. It's dark when I arrive. I'm meeting Justin and Sonia at dinner time. They're night shifters. Sonia works in long-term care as a nurse. Justin is an ordained minister, and he keeps Sonia's hours. So I'm catching them at the beginning of their day. Their neighborhood of newish single-family homes and duplexes is tucked away off a busy road. I spot their house.
His car's license plate says Skulls. Other than the license plate, the house looks pretty typical in this little subdivision. Until I step inside.
Wow. Welcome to our home. Right away. You can't miss it.
My eyes immediately drift to under the TV, where a skeleton rests on its back in a glass box, glowing under black light. Across the room, next to the overstuffed leather couch, another skeleton hangs in an upright coffin. A spinal column lamp sits on a table. And I haven't even turned to my left and my right yet, where two pairs of skeletons flank the front hall.
This is not really a living room anymore. It's been turned over to the skeletons.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Standing here, I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 full skeletons.
My coffin table.
Oh, wow.
Justin lifts the lid of the coffin table to reveal the 7th skeleton in the room.
So this was an antique coffin.
1860s.
That we sent to the Smyrna prison because they have a wood shop department. And they redid this and put the legs on it and made it into a coffin table for us.
Wow. And this was the coffin that the skeleton came in?
Yep.
Yeah, it was stored in this.
Yes, that was the deal with the coffin or the skeletons when they came. They were all stored in antique coffins.
Which
and they all had to go with antique coffins. So when they all
Justin died, and Sonia don't have all these remains as a gag or so they can live in some kind of haunted house. And they don't see themselves as collectors at all.
Hate saying that we collect remains, even though we collect in the sense that we gather. And not that we collect because we're morbidly, you know, want to have a house full of bones. I didn't wake up and go, oh, you know what? I think bones are something I want to play with. This was something I was called to do. People rescue puppies and kittens, and we rescue medical specimens. These items, people, they were lost to time for whatever reason, no longer being used, collecting dust and storage. I got one over there that's been chewed on by mice so bad she's fallen apart, and they deserve better than that.
This journey all started with Tyler.
Yeah, he's a geriatric skull. He has one tooth.
Oh, yeah, one little molar.
Yeah, I got in love with him. He was geriatric. I worked in hospice. It was perfect.
They found Tyler in an oddity shop they often visited. He wasn't for sale. He was just decoration.
He was smiling at me. I don't know what it was.
He looks happy, doesn't he?
He looked happy.
When COVID hit and the store closed, Justin wanted to help out the owner and offered a loan of $1,200. He took Tyler as collateral. The owner never paid back the loan, and Tyler sparked something for Justin and Sonia.
They got Tyler for me, and then I said I needed a whole skeleton for the corner.
From there, Justin got to work, looking for how to get Sonia her skeleton. Websites like Skulls Unlimited sell human skeletons for upwards of $7,200. But Justin and Sonia didn't believe buying a human was morally right.
These are former people. These were someone's parents, someone's children, brothers, sisters. They need a little bit more respect than they're given.
Justin kept hunting, and he found a fraternal organization, he won't say which one, that was looking to offload skeletons they'd been using for rituals. And that's how Justin and Sonia ended up with 7 skeletons in their living room. And more, they can find more space. Their goal, eventually, is to open a real ossuary, a building filled with human bones. They're thinking a church where people could visit and maybe get married and see the final resting place for forgotten remains. They know it sounds kind of weird.
When I was telling people this is what I'm doing this week, I'm going to visit some folks who rescue human remains, they were like, what the
f-? You know? Yeah.
Like, yeah. So like, what do you say to, what do you, how do you explain to people, like?
Get to know someone like us first, because this is honestly not just unique, but it's trailblazing. It's different. It's something nobody's ever really seen before. And we have the opportunity to do something wild, crazy, and cool. And you're standing here in my living room seeing this yourself. There's nothing gross here. There's no blood, no guts, and no gore. This isn't set up like Halloween or something. You're not coming in here to be.
And it really isn't. It's tasteful. The skeletons are in glass display boxes or hanging in coffins. They all have names. It's almost museum-like. I'm not grossed out by it at all. I'm more intrigued. I'm interested in their interest in it all. I do wonder, though, how different are Justin and Sonia than any other collectors?
That was an excerpt from the podcast Last Seen Postmortem from member station WBUR and host Ali Jarmani. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. I often think of the UK, where I live, as somewhere between America and Europe, halfway between US-style free market capitalism and the more regulated economies of Europe. So I was surprised when I learned about the water industry here, how deregulated water companies are, and either because or despite that, how polluted the country's coasts and rivers have become. 3/4 of England's rivers have unsafe levels of raw sewage. And I went to meet a bunch of surfers who are trying to change that.
I like to watch and see if there's any seals.
Seals?
Oh, yeah. Quite often they just sort of bob around.
40 years ago, Leslie Kazan Pinfield met a surfer, fell in love, and settled down near a stunning beach in Cornwall, southwest England.
So we're at this pristine beach. The wind is blowing. People are walking their dogs. There were a couple surfers in the water. And just offshore, and this looks beautiful, blue water. You're talking about seals, wildlife. But just offshore here,
you might be swimming or surfing, and there's a piece of feces in front of you.
Human feces, toilet paper, used tampons, floating in the water where she was surfing. When England first built sewers in the 19th century, they piped wastewater out into the sea, but they didn't treat it. London's River Thames smelled so bad they called it the Great Stink, and MPs refused to sit in Parliament next to the river. In the 1980s, Leslie's local water company started macerating the solids, liquefying them. So you wouldn't see sewage in the water, but surfers would get
eye infections, ear infections, throat infections, I mean, obviously vomiting and diarrhea.
Sick of this, literally, Leslie and her surf buddies in 1990 founded the Surfers Against Sewage, which has since grown into one of the UK's most famous charities, staging protests, raising this issue in the media.
Sewage being pumped directly into the
chemicals, agricultural,
824 sewage spills,
and winning the fight for sewage treatment and environmental regulation.
So we're going to just walk down to the beach, I think.
Decades later, I catch up with the surfers' executive team doing a cold plunge after a long day of meetings.
I'm Giles Bristow. I'm the chief executive of Surfers Against Sewage.
Nowadays, most UK wastewater does get treated. And Giles says the surfers have a new focus.
Kind of fat cat water company execs are taking huge bonuses.
The privatisation of UK utilities, which began in the 1980s under Margaret Thatcher,
Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Gentleman is aware,
aimed to get investors to foot the bill to upgrade Victorian-era water pipes.
That the water privatisation, I believe, will go very successfully indeed.
It did not, though. Charles Watson runs the environmental group River Action. I asked him about my local water utility in London.
Thames Water, the biggest water utility in Europe, it's basically bankrupt. They had a shareholder, there was a private equity investor who loaded the company's balance sheet with debt and then stripped out huge special dividends and then sort of ran away and sold on to somebody else.
The result, despite the surfers' campaign and so much progress in recent decades, is that Britain's water quality is declining again.
We saw 3.6 million hours of raw sewage being dumped into Britain's rivers last year. If people did that in France or continental Europe, people go to jail.
That's what the UK's new centre-left government, elected this past summer, is promising to do. Fine water companies that pollute, even jail executives, and close a loophole that allowed sewage spills to double last year alone. And nowhere is that loophole more apparent than in Henley. A bucolic town on the River Thames that's famous for an annual rowing regatta, where participants have gotten sick just from getting splashed with water contaminated with E. coli.
So this is the centre of Henley. So we're just sort of opposite an outflow.
So there's a pipe coming out from underneath the street, and then there's pretty fast-flowing water here, and it hasn't rained for days, actually. So this is not rain running.
No, and I think there's another one over here.
Local Dave Wallace shows me a combined sewer overflow pipe, where untreated raw sewage flows into the Thames. UK law allows water companies to do this in exceptional circumstances. Now, that's supposed to mean once or twice a year if huge rainfall floods the system. But water companies have been doing it regularly, even when it's sunny outside.
This is picturesque, quintessential UK town. And here we have an open sewer, you know. I mean, and we're sort of not living in Victorian times. We're in 2024. This stuff should be sorted out.
Dave is trying to do that. He's a former fintech guy turned citizen scientist volunteer.
This is what we use for getting the water samples.
Wow.
Who tests water samples from the River Thames weekly. He needed an extra hand, but he made me wear rubber gloves.
Incredible to have to protect yourself from the...
Well, I'd feel awful if you went back and...
So I'm holding this test tube all the way to the top?
Yeah, if possible. I mean, you can see that's already...
Oh, it's turning pink.
Turning pink?
Is that good or bad?
That's bad.
Oh.
And then the phosphates.
Phosphates and nitrates showed ecologically damaging levels of agricultural runoff. And E. coli was nearly six times what's safe. I was glad I wore those rubber gloves. This river, Dave says...
I don't know. It's intrinsically part of everything that is kind of English. Like, it comes from the Cotswolds all the way down to the sea. And like so many rivers around the world, it's the lifeblood of the countries, the places. The history of the UK is the history of the Thames.
The power to protect this river and other UK waterways, to fully fund regulators and enforce environmental laws, lies just downstream from here. At the UK Parliament. King Charles visited Australia this week. He's the first British monarch to do that in 13 years. And at a reception in the capital, he was heckled by an Indigenous senator.
Give us what you stole from us!
Senator Lydia Thorpe shouted at the king, accusing Britain of stealing Indigenous land. Australia is a member of the Commonwealth, a group of countries, many of them former British colonies, some of which, like Australia, still have the British King as their head of state. And they held a summit this week, calling for reparations for slavery and other injustices under British colonial rule. Tomorrow on All Things Considered, we'll have a report from that summit about the elephant in the room, Britain's colonial past. Thanks for listening. This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Lauren Freyer in London.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Subaru. Subaru has donated more than $60 million to support the adoption, rescue, transport, and health of more than 504,000 animals. Learn more at Subaru.com/pets. From Indeed, designed to be an end-to-end hiring solution for businesses of all sizes to attract, interview, and hire candidates, all from one platform. Learn more at Indeed.com/NPR. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. And always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us here on a Saturday afternoon. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on Cherry Street Youth in Chanute, an after-school program for kindergarten through fifth grade students, welcoming volunteers for special projects, reading to the children, or to share a talent or skill. Details on how to get involved at cherrystreet.org. Tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, partly cloudy skies, a low of 40 degrees. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 72. For Sunday night, cloudy with a low of 57. Partly sunny with highs in the mid-80s. On Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
Welcome to 105 Live. This is Nick Carswell joining you for the next hour with music being made all across the state of Kansas, all 105 counties from Allen to Wyandotte. Thanks for joining us this evening. We have a full show lined up for you. We're going to be hearing music from Wichita with Rudy Love and the Encore. We're going to go to Manhattan with Nirvana Hope, a couple of local Lawrence acts, and our in-studio session is with Eddie Moore's Electric Group. Eddie joined me in studio, and we have live tracks from their set at the Bottleneck that was recorded early in September. So stick around for that a little later on. Getting us started this week, originally from Shawnee, Kansas, now based in Lawrence, this is Lonnie Fisher from the Floating Palace album released earlier this year. This is I Will Never Forget. It's 105 Live on Kansas Public Radio.
Got so much
till noon. I need a little space, you can call it a moon. But there's no time to waste, I got no time to lose. Oh, I kiss you, you didn't notice I've been gone. Faded and never from moment to moment. I can't let nobody take me out of my zone. Can't let just anybody make me lose my focus. Yeah, it's so hard to overcome you. When you're coming over, I can't let go of you. I can't hang around no longer. Even though you know I love you, I know I looked around you. Now that I found you, I can overcome. I swear it was you. Ain't like we ever fight. So right now I don't want to. Feel so bright, like second nature. We're easy to bite. We look perfect on paper. But I guess you let the notice I'm gone. Faded and then I'm from moment to moment. I can't let nobody take me out of my zone. Can't let just anybody make me lose my focus. You're such a beautiful face, oh, but it ain't the time or the place. Oh no, it's so hard to overcome you. When you're coming over, I can't let go of you. I can't hang around no longer. Even though you know I love you, I do. I look around you. Now that I found you, I can't
bit of funky soul music here on 105 Live. That is Kelly Hunt. The track is Too Much History. The Lawrence native has a show coming up November 9th at the Lawrence Arts Center, part of their Downtown Underground concert series. Kelly Hunt comes home celebrating a 30-year career with Kelly Hunt and the Five. Always a fun show with gospel, soul, a little bit of blues, and a selection of songs spanning a 30-year career from Lawrence's own Kelly Hunt. Before that, we heard Rudy Love and the Encore. That track was Overcome. That was a single they put out last year. Rudy Love is based in Wichita. Family members that have played together for most of their lives. And Rudy is the son of the late Rudy Love Sr., who was a musical mentor to the band and also performed with Sly and the Family Stone. So going back with some Kansas music history with Rudy Love from Wichita. And kicking off that set was Lonnie Fisher. The track was I Will Never Forget. That's from his album Floating Palace. Really enjoyed that sound. He references Roy Orbison, David Bowie. Certainly hear those, as well as maybe some new wave, Echo and the Bunnymen. That is Lonnie Fisher out of Lawrence. Okay, we're going to go straight to our live session next. Eddie Moore and his electric group performed live in the Bottleneck in early September as part of the Mixmaster Conference, and Eddie joined me in studio for some chat and discussion, and we're going to hear some of those live tracks coming up next on 105 Live.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia, and we're always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us for 105 Live here on a Saturday afternoon. There are guitars galore tonight on KPR's Live at Green Lady Lounge. We'll hear from Guitar Elation, featuring two of KC's top guitar pickers, Danny Embry and Brian Baggett, in an hour of original tunes. Join us for some Kansas City Jazz live at Green Lady Lounge is tonight at 6 here on Kansas Public Radio. For tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, partly cloudy skies, a low of 40 degrees. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 72. For Sunday night, cloudy skies, a low of 57, and then breezy, partly sunny, and highs in the mid-80s on Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
It's 105 Live with me, Nick Carswell. I am joined in studio with Eddie Moore, who is our live guest this week. Eddie, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Nick.
We are playing some tracks that we recorded in the Bottleneck in Lawrence as part of the Mixmaster Conference at the start of September, and we were super excited to have your electric group as the closer of the night, kind of a late night, very fun, yeah. Very vibey set. It was awesome. Thank you for playing that.
Oh, it was amazing to be there. Actually, my first time playing in the Bottleneck, so...
Oh,
it was really
okay. Good. You guys sounded great. Very excited to share some of the live tracks. But before we do, I just want to tell folks a little bit about who you are. You're originally from Houston, relocated to KC to study under Bobby Watson at UMKC in jazz studies. You got Eddie Moore in the Outer Circle, several records, live track singles. I know this year you put out Tribe Sessions, which was in one of your studio spaces. This is a list here. I know you had your Intuition record. Your Aperture, which was live piano works, was something kind of different for you. There was a question coming at the end of this. You've also been a recipient of the Charlotte Street's Generative Performance Award. You created the Proto Lab there at Charlotte Street, which is a platform for experimental collaboration, time-based artists, producers, and musicians. You've been the artist in residence at Kemper Museum of Art, and probably your biggest connection to Kansas is that you teach jazz at the University of Kansas.
Yes.
That and all that before I actually mentioned the set that you played. So, I mean, I want to introduce, like, what you did at the Bottleneck, how it fits in. You know, you do a lot of different things. Like, how do you describe it to people? Or maybe you don't worry about it too much.
Yeah. Either. I play keyboard. Yeah. And therefore, they're all keyboards. I've always loved playing electric. And then all of it, I love improvising. So all of it is improvised, like, is based around that. Whether I'm playing solo piano through Aperture or in different iterations of the group, quartet, piano trio, and even sometimes duo with like Ableton Technology, I'm always improvising. Sometimes that's like in the realm of free improvisation where I'm making everything up with the duo situation, or more in a traditional state where it's like, this is a composition, we're improvising through the form. And in the electric group, we're improvising through the form of things. I ultimately started playing key bass because there's just a rarity of electric bass players in this area for this style. So I started playing key bass, and then our vibraphonist was like, well, I can play keys too. So we just toss up the bass roll.
Okay.
Really?
So you're sharing bass lines with the vibraphonist is Isaiah Petri?
Yeah, Isaiah.
Isaiah, excuse me. And then you had a drummer.
Yeah, and the drummer is Jalen Ward. From the Ward family. I mean, I've probably been knowing him since he's like 9 years old.
Okay.
So he's amazing.
Yeah. So that was your electric group. And yeah, lots of improvisation, as you said there. We've got some long songs. So we're probably going to play like two pieces in this segment. Maybe we'll squeeze in another, or we'll figure out other ways to share this awesome live set, throughout the life of 105 Live. But, yeah, why don't you go ahead and tell us about this first song we're going to play. It's $5 Pocket, I believe.
Yeah. Over the summer, I was in the last stages of Tribe Studios, and I was thinking about just what to do with my time and composition. So I made a series of just like videos for social media, and I'd seen that been going around and just getting my production chops, really. So I made several short compositions that are accompanied by video, and then it showcased me on a different keyboard instrument. Sometimes that was piano, sometimes that was synthesizer as pads, and sometimes that was on Rhodes. This was one of the Rhodes features, and so I just kind of made everything, all the instruments, and produced that, and then put Rhodes with my setup there, and then grabbed a little video, and all these compositions just kind of stayed as something that I could flush out into the live realm. So $5 Pocket comes from that. It's just a simple, super simple groove, like a $5, and this is us playing it live.
All right, and you kicking it off with key bass, I believe, and then you trade it off over solos. Okay. Well, this is live from the stage in the Bottleneck, recorded earlier in September as part of the Mixmaster Conference. It's the Eddie Moore's $5 Pocket.
From the stage at the Bottleneck as part of the Mixmaster Conference, recorded back in September. That is Eddie Moore's electric group. The track was $5 Pocket. Eddie Moore is with me in studio here, and you said that came out of a smaller concept for socials or for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so like, just trying to, just producing music as a solo artist and then putting some video up, share with people online. And I had a whole series, I think I did one a week.
Okay.
Or a few a day, and then just like practicing editing video, practicing production, and then coming up with like simple ideas that just kind of move.
Yeah. Okay. And again, you had Jim Ward on drums and Isaiah Petrie on the vibraphone, and also key bass. So when one is kind of soloing on your main instrument, so to speak, the other is holding up the bass line.
Yes.
Okay. Samples in there as well with on drums and lots of effect. Well, I wanted to ask about, and you mentioned already keyboards, keyboard is kind of the starting point, but you use obviously different sounds. You're emulating some classic instruments, Rhodes, and but then I know you had effects pedals and a whole bunch. You want to talk about that first?
I got into effects pedals when I started playing with a psych rock band, Various Blonde, actually, and actually synthesizer. The band leader pushed me into a more analog sound. And this is probably like 2015, and then just kind of built my, I guess, like my pedal board up from watching other keyboard players and being inspired. So the one that you hear stuttering in this track is a company out of California called Maris. So that's the Autobit Jr. You've probably seen J3PO, a famous keyboarder player, use it all the time.
Okay.
It's like a bit crusher stutter pedal that does a lot of different things, actually. And it's probably one of my favorites. I use it mostly on Rhodes and piano because those are like the traditional instruments people are used to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I activate the pedal, it really messes with people because then you hear this traditional sound like scrambled up. Mm. I'm afraid to use it with synthesizer here because it's very video gamey and I might scare someone. Mostly piano and Rhodes right now. In the production realm, I use it on a lot of different things. And then a couple of other ones with like reverb and delay for the different synthesizers. That's the thing about keyboard that's different than guitar. I can't just chain them all together. each keyboard kind of has to have its individual pedal chain.
Okay.
Because they're separate lines.
Yeah. I want to make sure and touch on, you mentioned your Aperture record.
Yeah.
So not contrasting it as completely different to everything that we've talked about, but you said it took a while to get to a solo piano record. How did that come about?
Oh, man, this is crazy. So a friend of mine, I guess a group of friends, they're always subbing solo piano work to around. And I finally just started taking it and having more confidence in my solo works and playing ability. It's never been something I gravitated to. Actually, I didn't really like it.
Mm.
And I gravitated to it, kind of started listening more to solo piano, jazz solo piano, and finding what I like and getting out of the school frame of mind of, I have to play a specific way for it to be validated. And over a few years and getting comfortable and finding my voice, I found it was time to kind of do my own thing with it. And it was crazy because I was where have I been playing solo piano the most? And that's been at Corvino. So I was this is a part of my voice. The aesthetic is a part of what makes me feel comfortable. So I think earlier this year in January, first week of January, Jalen and I, because he's an engineer, we just brought a mobile rig. I asked if I could record on the piano.
Yeah.
And we went in the staff is there, so in off hours.
Well, and to be clear, this is a restaurant.
This is a restaurant. So you hear them. hear the back of the house, which actually is kind of part of it. My solo piano experience isn't in the concert hall. It's playing while people are eating dinner, which is totally fine for me. I know what my role is, and it's an interesting one, actually. And so I did it at the restaurant. I wanted them to be there. And then I'm just inspired by all these crazy artists. So I felt it. I did a felting technique with the piano, which made it darker. And I had a quarter inch layer of felt that I laid between the hammers and the strings.
Okay.
Which is why the piano sounds real dark and intimate like that.
Like a treated piano, but not in it, but more in this overall sculpting of the sound.
Yeah.
Because people do pretty crazy stuff with treated pianos.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
But you were going for a specific color.
Yeah, just a specific color. That piano is traditionally pretty bright, so I wanted it darker. It's a little bit more intimate. And then I tried out a couple different miking techniques because we had been experimenting in the studio. So way went overboard.
Yeah.
And mixed this one myself, and then I wrote songs for this record, and then I improvised some of them for the record. So it's a combination of both. And some really great pieces came out of that. They're opening a new cocktail lounge, and they named one of the cocktails after the song.
There you go.
Into the Woods. And I was like, oh man, this is crazy. So just coming up with these crazy creative ideas to just push ourselves both as a composer, a performer, and as an engineer and an artist, just to record our own things. Mm-hmm. So it came out really well. I'm pretty happy with it, actually.
Yeah, Aperture Live Piano Works, and that's from this year, from 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on all the streaming places, all the places to hear music. Well, I appreciate you being here. I do want to ask, you teach at KU, you're also a facilitator for some professional development programs. You've had your own studio space near Incubator and the Proto Lab we already mentioned. So you're obviously community-minded, you want to support other artists like you. Where does that come from? Why is that an important thing for you?
I think it's an important thing for me, just my upbringing into jazz music. I wanted to learn it. I was in a realm where it wasn't easy for me to learn, and there wasn't a much of a community around that, and I was super hungry and very annoying. So and with that, I'm not blaming anyone, or I'm not even bitter, but I would never want anyone to go through that experience. And so I just try to make, I don't know, it's just a part of me that it doesn't ever happen. Yeah. So if you run into me and you ask me questions, I'm probably going to give you all the answers right then. And just create this realm of comfort and creating, because I really don't feel like it should be that hard. And this isn't a sport to me, so I never think about it as a competitive thing. It's kind of because I also grew up at the skate park. It's showing up to the skate park and wanting to skate.
Right.
We don't think about it. You just want to skate, and you want to get better, or you just want to have fun. But no one's dogging you because you're not as good as everybody else.
Right.
Because there's only a select few people that are at the park. So I kind of have that energy with music, and it's been really fun. I don't know. I'll never lose it.
Yeah. Okay, well, before we introduce the next song, how do people connect with you? Where can people find out more about Eddie Moore?
Sure. If you're not on social media, which that is absolutely cool, you can connect with me at www.eddiemooremusic.com. I post a calendar there. I have new projects there. You can listen to music. I really just want you to listen to the music. If you are on social media, you can mostly follow what I'm doing on Instagram. My handle is @moorepiano. And I'm on Facebook under my name, Eddie Moore. I think those three places are the best way to stay connected and keep up with new projects.
Awesome. Okay. And then we got one more track from The Bottleneck. And this is, in the scale of what you do, this is a cover. Call it a cover, but I mean, there's so much improv and your own flavor on it. But tell us about this track we're going to hear.
Yeah, I think this one is Searching by Roy Ayers. I don't usually play covers, but I wanted to bring this one into the group. Especially meeting Isaiah, a phenomenal vibraphonist. And I think when I met him, he had never played any Roy Ayers. So I kind of took it upon myself to bring that into the group and make it a feature for him. And he does it more than justice. So just kind of like something that has inspired me and bringing it to the group for the instrumentation that we have. And it's a nice little groovy tune. Roy Ayers is one of my favorite artists of that time period. And I'm glad we could play it, actually.
Yeah, awesome. So Eddie Moore's Electric Group is yourself on keys, Jalen Ward on drums, and Isaiah Petrie on vibraphone?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for this awesome set at The Bottleneck. And yeah, cheers.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. It was a lot of fun.
All right, and live from the stage in The Bottleneck, this is a Roy Ayers tune, Searching is the track. It's Eddie Moore's Electric Group on 105 Live.
Thank you.
recorded live in the Bottleneck as part of the Mixmaster Conference back in early September. That is Eddie Moore's Electric Group. That last track was a Roy Ayers tune, Searching. Thanks to Jason Sloat and all the staff at the Bottleneck for making that sound so good. And we're excited to bring you more music from that same showcase back in early September here on 105 Live. Okay, we're going to hear more music from Manhattan, from Nirvana Hope, as well as the new single from Likes here on 105 Live on KPR.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 91.3 Junction City. And we're always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us for 105 Live here on a Saturday afternoon. Your donation is the power that keeps KPR independent, public-minded, and focused on you and your community. That's how we provide culture, information, and intelligent entertainment. KPR is everything you make it, and so much more. KPR matters to you, and your support matters to KPR. Contribute now at that website, kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks to all of you for your marvelous support of KPR. Partly cloudy skies, a low of 40 degrees tonight in northeast and east central Kansas. For tomorrow, sunny with a high of 72. Cloudy tomorrow night with a low of 57. Temperatures in the mid-80s on Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
take my own advice. Don't bother, I'll do it the wrong way. No shoes, I'm taking my time. Don't need no pavement or freeway.
Music from Manhattan, Kansas here on 105 Live. That is Nirvana, Hope. The track is To Never Know. That's from an album called Rewind, which was released earlier this year. Nirvana is a 19-year-old solo musician living in Manhattan, Kansas. Started playing guitar when she was 8 and fell in love performing around 14. Graduated from a very small town high school in 2022 and moved to Manhattan to start really pursuing music. Nirvana has been playing around the Manhattan, Lawrence, and Kansas City area, and I really enjoyed that. That featured a kazoo solo, in case you were wondering, which, yeah, I've got a lot of time for kazoo. It's a debut for the kazoo on 105 Live. That is from Nirvana Hope. Before that, we heard Liney Blue. Liney is based out of Kansas City with lots of Lawrence connections, KU, KJHK, and now performing as Liney Blue. That's from an EP in 2023 called Pennsylvania Street. That is Liney Blue. You can also catch them performing at the Record Bar in Kansas City on Halloween night. They're playing in Tulsa on November 1st in the Replay Lounge in Lawrence, Kansas on November 2nd. That's Liney Blue. All right, we got time for one more tune. This is from Likes. You may remember Likes from our first live session with those live tracks, interview, and video online. Well, Likes have a new single out. It's Hard to Talk. Great piece of Strokes-esque rock pop from the Lawrence outfit, Likes. This is Hard to Talk. This has been 105 Live. I'm Nick Carswell. Thank you for joining me.
So hard to talk, my fool.
Support for 105 Live on KPR comes from the Burt Nash Center, reminding listeners that it's okay not to be okay. Information about taking the first step to addressing stress, anxiety, and depression is at 785-843-9192 or burtnash.org. NKU Theater, presenting Hookman, a darkly comic salute to teenage slasher films, reminding everyone that college can be scary. Playing Friday through Thursday, November 7th. Tickets at kutheater.com. From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. Online at kansaspublicradio.org.
The guitar has been an essential part of jazz since the beginning, and jazz guitarists are among the most innovative figures in the music. Today at the Green Lady Lounge, we've got guitars galore with a group known as Guitar Elation, featuring two of Kansas City's top guitar pickers, Danny Embry and Brian Baggett. I'm Darryl Brogdon. Please join us for an hour of original KC Jazz, live at